We can eradicate food deserts with this technology.
This is Hoda Kotb from Joy 101 with Hoda Kotb. And that was Jalea Hemmings. She and her husband created Nourish and Bloom Market, an AI-powered grocery store. Scan a QR code to enter, pick what you need, and walk out. Or as Jalea puts it,
tap, grab, and go 24/7. We started to get flooded with folks saying, hey, I need you in my city.
It became their mission to develop a store that could open within 3 months, even without any infrastructure.
And just when we were like, how are we going to accomplish this goal? We won the AT&T Small Business Contest Grant. That $50,000 got us over the finish line where we built the first AI-powered grocery shipping container in the country.
For Jalea, it's about building a legacy to show the world that you can solve any problem when you work together.
Having the support of AT&T, the city of Atlanta, is huge. Look at how many people we've been able to help.
Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
Before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least 3 ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to another episode of the Mac Rumor Show. It is a big one. It is post-event recap, basically. Everything that actually happened, how much were the leaks, correct, and how much was there left? There was a lot of surprises, I feel like, for a certain device rather than some of the other ones. I think we pretty much got most of everything that we were thinking. I'll just come out and say it. The iPhone Duo had a couple of things that we didn't expect, or at least we talked about, but like some things were just unlikely. And we'll get to all of that. I have not talked to Hartley pretty much at all, so I cannot wait to hear his impressions on it. I have no idea what you think, honestly. It's been a really crazy week. And unfortunately, we are going to have to start with not only Hartley's weather update, but we're going to go in order of the actual event. And so iPhone Duo will be later in this episode. But Hartley, how is the weather? Is it surprise and shine for you?
I mean, yeah, this is the real update that people have tuned into this episode for. But it's mild, it's warm.
I went from 94 degrees, which I don't know, what is that? It's like 30-something Celsius, whatever's hot for you, whatever you guys were going through. It was like 95 out there in Cupertino for both days, and I was wearing pants like a very unsmart person. This unsmart, even see, it's warped my brain. So like, I can't even think clearly when you have pants on and it's that hot. And then I got back to here, and it's a perfect 70 degrees and sunny. So excited about this, and more so excited about all the products that are going to be coming in the next few weeks to over a month, because things are spread out. Let's start with what Apple started with, which was the iPhone 18 Pro, kind of the dead giveaway that this is not the main star of the show when they start off with the iPhone 18. So we got 2 new iPhones, 18 Pro and 18 Pro Max, very much the exact same sizes as last year. But one of the biggest changes is on the front. We talked about this a lot, and there's a smaller dynamic island, which can now show you up to 3, what is it, 3 live activities at once?
Yes, if you happen to have 3 going at once, which, I mean, sometimes I do, not often, but whatever.
I mean, I think I did, honestly, I think I had one of the game scores happening, I had music going on, and I was in an Uber at the same time, so that would have come in handy. But yeah, smaller, but somehow able to feature more, which, I mean, I guess it's not really the dynamic island that actually holds all of that. It is just software off to the sides on it. Yeah, I mean, A20 Pro chip's pretty good. There's a lot of faster. I mean, what were your thoughts of the 18 Pro? First off, actually, this has been the hot topic amongst all the people that I've talked to. I think it's a pretty easy dead giveaway, and we'll see if you agree with me. The hero color of the iPhone 18 Pro. Which one do you think is the main, this is what Apple's marketing hero color?
It's the burgundy.
Yes. Okay. See, thank you. Like, it's so, if I had people telling me it was the blue, and I'm like, okay, when you watch the introduction video, it starts with burgundy, it ends with burgundy. There was lots of burgundy, not a lot of, was it glacier blue or just glacier?
Yeah. So it wasn't a sky blue after all, nor was it a dark cherry. But I do think that it looks fantastic, the burgundy. I don't think that the glacier is that nice. I wasn't as nice as I thought it would be. So I'm not tempted by that one.
I will say I think this is the best color lineup in a while because I think all of them are good. Just some are slightly less good than the other. So let's just run through it real quick. You have black. Classic. It is actually deep black. And I said this multiple times. I was like, oh, can I have the black one? To like an Apple PR person that's in the jungle of like, you know, can I see one of those devices? He corrected me three different times when I said black. And he was like, it's deep black. I'm like, okay, calm down. Like, I get it. Or is it true black? No, deep black, right? They're deep black and deep blue.
I believe so.
Okay. So deep black. He corrected me three times. So I shouldn't forget. And yet somehow I feel like I have. And it's the one that everybody wanted last year that you didn't get. So you should be, for those who were yelling about not having a black one last year, this better be the damn one that you get because it's black. I can attest to that. I really like how the aluminum frame now kind of just has a much better job of blending in with that glass. It is very seamless, honestly. You probably couldn't tell if there wasn't a cutout line. I think it would be all one, which is really nice. Silver, classic. I think people will still buy those. It's pretty timeless. I do miss the fact that you don't get that little white glass part. I think that's what really made that. And I'll love to hear your thoughts after I run through these, like which one you think is better. But it is classic. It's silver. It's good. Glacier, probably my least favorite out of all of them, to be honest with you. I don't even know. Usually I like to get two of these iPhones and usually it's the two new colors. I don't think I'm going to do the glacier. It's a blue. It's fine. It's kind of boring. Burgundy by far is the color that I'm going with. I think I'm going to use it a lot. It looks really nice in person. I don't know. I really like that. I really like black. I think it's kind of boring, but I really like the black one.
I agree. I think that they all are just ultimately more refined. I mean, we're looking at the same design. Yeah. Apple's very good at this. They introduce a new design and then they somehow make it feel fresh again the next year with new color options. And I think it's a very strong lineup. Even the silver is a different tone of silver and somehow looks different. But ultimately, even with the smaller dynamic island, this is a relatively small change. And I think that's kind of the theme with the iPhone 18 Pro in general, that although there are some good upgrades here, and it's undeniable that the A20 Pro is a significant leap forward, especially for on-device AI, which is obviously increasingly important. We've got the variable aperture camera, the smaller dynamic island, and the new color options. But I don't know that there's so much here that if you already own a 17 Pro, that it's going to be an instant upgrade year in a way that it was far easier to say things a little bit like that last year with the 17 Pro over the 16 Pro, because it just ultimately was a bigger upgrade last year. This does feel smaller in scale and more targeted. And I think that it's difficult with things like the smaller dynamic island and the variable aperture, which we should get into.
Yeah, for sure.
To actually kind of quantify how much difference that really makes to you. Certainly the dynamic island doesn't really. I mean, no one needs to be able to run three live activities in the dynamic island and see all three at once. And variable aperture, I mean, the rest of the camera hardware here is the same as last year. So you can already take fantastic pictures with a 17 Pro. It's not going to be dramatically better with the 18 Pro, but I do need to see some more pictures of this side by side and the actual results.
So, yeah, I mean, my take on this is that the same thing I was telling people last week when they were asking me like, oh, I want to get a new phone. I think I'm thinking about the 18 Pro. Is it worth it? Literally the day before or 2 days before, I think it was Monday, Labor Day, I was here we go. I was golfing, and I got paired up with somebody random that asked me what I did, and I explained to them, and they're like, I've got so many questions. I have a 13 Pro. This is a true story, by the way. I'm not just making up a random, you know, just for this anecdotal purpose, but like literally they asked me, should I upgrade to an 18 Pro? That's what I was thinking of getting. I have a 13 Pro. And I was like, no, based on rumors, unless there's some crazy surprise, in which case my apologies, but like, you need to, after this round, go get a 17 Pro now before you can't get it from Apple directly anymore. And because the other prices are going to be, you know, at least $100 higher, which, spoiler alert, they were $100 higher across the board. And everything else, even if you're like, maybe I'll just get a 17, those all got jacked up in price and the Air and everything. So go do it now. Because by the time they announce a new one, you're not going to be able to do that. And then you're going to be looking secondhand market and all of that. So I don't know that that's a good idea. I just don't think there's going to be a huge change. You're already coming from a 13 Pro. It's going to be fine. Like you're already going to experience a really big update. I don't think from then on, you know, the 17 to the 18, this is just my roundabout way of agreeing with you, Harley. There's just not a lot there. I will say A20 Pro seems to be, almost knocked my coffee over, by the way, on me. That would have been burning hot. Might have been good for the podcast. Maybe a little clip there to go viral. The A20 Pro seems great. You know, huge efficiencies. I've seen some early benchmarks. It's crazy how much better it is than last year's, whatever. That I don't think that's still a reason to go upgrade. When I picked it up in my hands, I thought it was thicker and heavier. Turns out one of those is true, right? It is just heavier. Correct. It otherwise is the same dimensions, but it does feel substantially, like, because it's heavier, it does honestly feel a little bit thicker. And with that, I thought, oh, well, maybe that's because they raised the battery on each. So apparently, and maybe I heard this incorrectly, I am doing a lot during these keynotes. The battery capacity is this, like, you're getting the same amount, not necessarily the actual rating, but Apple is saying that you can get the same amount of battery life on the Pro than the Pro Max had last year, correct?
I think it's still slightly shorter, but it's effectively, I think it's about 3 hours more on both devices.
Okay. I feel like I heard John say the Pro gives you the same battery.
But it's something like last year was 30 hours on the Pro, 35 on the Pro Max, and now I think it's 33 on the Pro.
Okay.
And I don't know, 30, it's got to be more than that. Maybe it's 40-something? 40-something on the Pro Max?
I think it's 44 off the top of my head. That's what number I'm listing. Or maybe that could be for the Duo, but it's something in the 40s. But here's the thing, though. He definitely said something like, and I think it was Jaws who was talking about it, and he definitely said something along the lines of, this year's Pro gives you effectively or nearly or close to or just about, you know, his way of kind of rounding up and saying that you get the same amount as the Pro Max. And a lot of people loved the Pro Max battery last year. So if the Pro gets even better, by the way, from a selfish perspective, that just makes me not want the Pro Max even more. However, that means the Pro Max has an insane amount of battery too. It's the largest battery in any iPhone.
So this is the biggest battery life increase generation over generation that Apple has ever delivered, I believe, with the Pro Max.
Yeah.
So it should be quite an extreme battery life. But I think we're at the point now where certainly the Pro is more than good enough. I mean, we've got the efficiency improvements of the A20. A big part of that that is important to mention is the new thermal architecture. It's got the vapor chamber is 3 times larger. It connects directly to the memory. It spreads across the whole device. There are additional layers that separate the display from the rest of the thermal architecture. They've really put a lot of effort into the engineering of improving the thermals of this device, which already were better last year. But yeah. I think that that's part of how they are taking advantage of being able to get better sustained performance from the A20. And the A20 itself is more efficient. And then you've also got the C2 modem in here now, which now supports millimeter wave connectivity.
So that whole thing about two different modems, you know, for regions is just not
well,
a thing.
It is still true. It looks like, okay. I mean, that was ultimately from factory leaked information. And so it is true, just not in the way that it was interpreted. So this is maybe a little bit boring, but effectively it's that they are still using Qualcomm modems, but only in the Pro Max and only in the US. But every other device, whether that's a Pro Max in Europe or a Pro in the US, still uses the C2.
But if you have a Pro, it's using the C2 in the US.
Correct.
And it still gets millimeter wave. So what's the point what's the point of doing that for the Pro Max? Was it a space thing?
No, because they're able to do the C2 inside the models for the rest of the world. I would imagine it's got to be to do with Apple's agreement with Qualcomm, which is obviously a long-standing partnership, and they probably had to put it in away. Something.
Okay. Interesting.
I don't know. That's just a guess.
I didn't get a chance to check into it, but I know that they kept saying all the phones had the C2, and then there was no like asterisk, at least not in the keynote or anything, that said like only in specific regions. If there was, then I missed it. So it's good to learn from you on that one. I had questions on it. I will need to get into the biggest upgrade, which is basically the camera. But before we do that, I do want to take a quick second to hear from today's sponsor. The wait is finally over. Football is here, and so is DraftKings. And this year, DraftKings is now live in all 50 states, one app, every sport, nationwide. So whether you're following your favorite football team, like for me, it's the Browns. Yes, I know we're terrible. We don't need to talk about it. But if you're following them or another team or jumping into another sport, it's all going to be right there in one place. And new DraftKings customers, you can sign up right now with code MAC, M-A-C. And if you spend $5, you get $200 in rewards within 21 days. It includes all markets. That's again, code MAC, M-A-C. For $5, if you spend it, you get $200 back in rewards. This is in partnership with DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 1-800-MY-RESET. Connecticut, call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org on behalf of Boot Hill Casino in Kansas. Bet tax pass-through may apply in Illinois. 21 and over. Void in Canada. Bet with DraftKings Sportsbook to get bonus bets that expire in 7 days or trade with DraftKings Predictions to get predictions dollars that expire in 1 year. Event contract trading involves risk of loss. Predictions offer void in New York. Non-withdrawable rewards issued as $50 click-to-claims every 7 days for 21 days. Terms at dkng.co/offer. Limited time offer. Nationwide based on sportsbook predictions and free-to-play sports contest availability. Varies by state.
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
Before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least 3 ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are 2 of the 4 hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.
Okay, so the camera, it got variable aperture, which is what we were all expecting. I got to test it. I will have a few samples later today. Day when you're listening to this, I should have a video up on my iPhone 18 Pro hands-on. I took like a few pictures. We weren't able to spend a ton of time, so we have to kind of take this with a grain of salt here. Variable aperture is cool. There's a lot of pro controls, like a lot more pro controls that you can ever do on an iPhone, which is really nice, and it's pretty easy to do in typical Apple fashion. You can control not only just the aperture, but white balance, and there's a histogram that pops up, and there's a lot there for people who take photography seriously. And the new photographic styles with film and grain control, which we'll talk about in a minute. However, I mean, the variable aperture is cool. You could definitely notice when you flip from 1.48 to 4, like there's definitely a noticeable difference. Is it worth not like spending more money for this? I don't know. My first initial thoughts are no, but I again, I need to like actually do a proper camera review. So just take my words with a grain of salt right now, but I'd love to hear from you, Hartley.
I think there are two points on this for me. The first is that in general, iPhone camera upgrades tend to be quite small. And occasionally we do get a big upgrade. Like last year's telephoto upgrade, going all the way up to 8X, and then you could crop it down to 4X. That was a huge upgrade. Normally, they're not that significant. And they do tend to be smaller and more incremental. But of course, when you look at iPhone photos from a few generations back, the step change feels more dramatic. So I agree that probably in a lot of situations, you won't notice a huge amount of difference, especially, say, if lighting is good and maybe it's not a portrait photo. But maybe if it is a portrait style image, you know, of an individual where maybe you want some bokeh behind them and it's in quite low light, then that should be a situation when the variable aperture does get an edge. But it's a very specific situation when it should shine the most. The other point about this is I do think Apple's up to its old tricks with some of this stuff, because I think it's very sneaky to gatekeep some of these features, which are just plain software features. They have absolutely nothing to do with the camera hardware, because bear in mind that you've been able to control these things with third-party apps for years on the iPhone. Right. So to try and say, oh, well, these are pro controls for the iPhone 18 Pro, and they let you control white balance, and this is all to do with, you know, the new sensor in iPhone 18 Pro. It's just a load of nonsense. You can do that on any previous iPhone. Get a histogram on there. It's the same. It's all the same.
Yeah. You could download the Blackmagic app for recording, and you can do all of that stuff.
And there are so many third party apps that have offered that kind of functionality for years, and you know, you can tell me that it's to do with the new image pipeline or whatever. I think the photographic styles are pretty much the same. You know, we've got so-called next-generation photographic styles on the iPhone 17 models. To me, there's no reason why we can't have that latest version. Again, because this is overall a pretty small upgrade for the iPhone 18 Pro, they've done the thing that they do sometimes, which is where they stack software upgrades on top that actually have no reason to be reserved for this device, which does annoy me actually when they do this. And they've always done it, you know, going right back to things like with the iPhone 6S introducing live photos. That's not a camera feature. That's a software feature.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm not going to kill them for that just because they've just been doing it for so long that it's to be expected.
I mean, it is to drive sales, but I almost wish that they wouldn't do that stuff, because I think it actually damages some of their otherwise very good reputation with a lot of these things. And they talk a lot about, you know, prolonged software support for devices. I think that this is an area in which they kind of undermine that. And instead, I would like them to be able to really show a lot more of what that variable aperture can do. Because watching the event, yeah, they showed off some examples, but it didn't fully come across to me how transformational it will be. Yeah. And that makes me a little concerned for... Is that because they actually wanted to spend time talking about this software stuff that actually is not dependent on the device? Or is it because there isn't enough difference to talk about with the variable aperture? I don't know. And that's something that, you know, I really need to see from these hands-on experiences. And I want to see some photos directly compared, because that's what really should indicate just how much of a difference there is. But I was a little bit annoyed by some of that. You know, even like they said the audio mix was improved and now it can isolate music. Well, I just don't believe that is an iPhone 18 Pro exclusive feature, or that it has to be. That absolutely could come to last year's 17 Pros.
I mean, the texture and grain control and photographic styles is hilarious, because you could just download any filter app and just do the same thing. But here's the thing. People don't want to do that, though. There are people out there that just want it to be baked into the phone.
Yeah, and in theory, photographic styles are supposed to be better than filters, because they access the raw data from the sensor. And so it isn't an overlaid filter. It's actually using the data directly from the image. But it absolutely could run on an older device. And there's a whole... I mean, when I look through this list of camera improvements, I would say, I don't know, 90% of them have no reason to be exclusive to the 18 Pro. I mean, even stuff like Apple reference image, they are saying that is to do with the sensor. Now, that may well be the case because it's only available on the new sensor, but I don't believe that if you're engineering a new standard, that actually does have to be exclusive to that sensor. I'm sure there is a way you could have engineered that to be appropriate for all of the new cameras and indeed previous ones. So if you are really serious about AI proving the authenticity of images and tackling AI slop, then actually debut a feature that's going to be widely used, not something that is exclusive to the one sensor on a device that actually has four sensors. Exactly. And ultimately is not going to be very widely used. So
that one I will believe they're not gatekeeping and it has to do with sensor because they didn't put it on the Duo.
That's true. And so that one is less so, but I do find a lot of this stuff to be very, very irritating because fine, the variable aperture is great. The new sensor, I'm excited to see what they do with that stuff, but I've just got no time for this like pro control stuff. It's just... What a shame it is to try and use things like that to upsell customers when really, you know, people have spent a lot of money on their iPhones last year and there's no reason why those devices shouldn't have this as well.
Speaking of spending a lot of money, before this episode becomes 2 hours long, we're just going to move on. And real quick, we want to touch on AppleCare One Family, which I didn't realize this until yesterday. I was on the plane and I was just reading some quick things that I missed. Okay, so AppleCare One. If you do it for your three devices, it's $19.99 a month, which, you know, that's a lot. But you have three devices. These things are expensive. We spend a lot of money on them. You could literally break all three devices. And if you had a fourth one, that one's kind of screwed. But if you have even if you don't have a family, if you have a family and you pay the $50 a month for AppleCare One Family, you can cover every single eligible device for your entire family, up to six people, for $50. So for an extra $30, you go from three devices for one person to every single device. Now, I don't know how many devices you guys have in your household. I'm a little bit of an anomaly, I feel like. I have a lot of devices. So if I wanted to make sure that these things don't get, if something happens to them and I want to protect them, especially with my kids, you could pay that $50 a month and just kind of sit back and, you know, let your kids throw it on the ground instead of having to worry about them, and baby it, which, I mean, I'd still feel like paying for insurance is always a scam. You know, we can talk about that whole thing in another podcast, but, you know, and it's always one of those, you don't love to pay for it until you need to use it. And then, you know, you can save yourself. But I just think that it's expensive until you see that you can cover every single device, which is kind of crazy to think about. But
yeah, I think it's a great deal. I think
it's a great deal, but it sucks that we have to pay $50 a month. Like I love and hate it, you know?
I think it's a very good compromise given that you can cover so many devices with it. And ultimately it just makes it easy for families. You know, if you've got a lot of devices, I think it makes sense.
I don't think Apple's going to be checking to see if you actually like have a big family either. So if you're just a solo person who's a degenerate and have a ton of devices, you could do this and ultimately save yourself more in the long run if you're really uncareful with all of your devices. All right, let's move on to the AirPods 5. We're going to spend literally 2 minutes on this. I'm actually allowed to talk about it. I have them right here. There's no embargo on that, which is crazy. I think this is one of the very few times that Apple's given us something and said, go ahead and talk about it, even though it's not technically out yet. You can order it. I think you can pre-order it now, but it doesn't come till next Friday. Which, by the way, the iPhone 18, we didn't talk about this. 18 Pro, pre-orders are tomorrow. I think Apple did this in order to not get in the way with today's the September 11th, 25th anniversary. That'll be tomorrow at 8 a.m. Eastern, 5 a.m. Pacific. If you're somewhere else, you're going to have to do the math. And they will be available next Friday. So that goes for everything else. Everything will be out next Friday. But anyways, AirPods 5, I mean, it wasn't really a surprise, but it kind of was because it came out of nowhere. Like, I think within the last like week or two that those were rumored to happen. And they did. And it's a great deal. Honestly, it's probably one of the best value products that got
announced. Yeah, I mean, it's a price cut. I think it's the headline feature.
Yeah.
AMC is now universal across the board. You don't get upsold on that anymore. So the fact is you can now get AirPods with ANC for $129, which is, I think, a fantastic price. And considering that these things are so often discounted, you know, on things like Prime Day, I think really the standard AirPods are looking better than ever. The thing I do find a little bit strange is there are still two different model tiers.
Yeah.
previously, it was a $50 upsell, and that would take you up to $179, and that's what got you ANC. Because ANC is now across the whole lineup, they have dropped that higher tier to $149. So it's only a $20 difference, and that gives you the wireless charging case. It gives you the stem touch-based volume controls, just like the AirPods Pro. And weirdly, it gives you one extra hour of battery life, which I don't understand because that's in the actual AirPod itself. So does it? Do those versions literally have larger batteries in them? I don't know what is delivering that extra 1 hour of battery life with ANC enabled. But I think they should just collapse this. Like if they just offered one thing at $139 and split the difference, like I think it would be so much more straightforward because I think consumers are going to be confused by what do you mean I get volume controls for $20? Like why are you upselling me on something like that? It's such an odd thing to do. ANC, I kind of understood it better. This is a little strange.
Well, not just that, but the wireless charging case too. You're not, you know, if you like to wirelessly charge. I mean, I guess in today's day and age, $20 is a lot of money. So if you're going to save $20, like, and you don't need those other things, then whatever. But yeah, I thought that was pretty funny. They're cannibalizing themselves already before they even release the product. People are just going to spend the $149 most likely.
I don't know that I could recommend saving $20 on AirPods, especially when they go on sale so often. I mean, realistically, in sales, that's going to shrink to $15. If you're worried about saving that much, don't buy AirPods in the first place. I mean, it's such a small amount of money.
Yes, I agree. Ultimately, if you can't, I'm not trying to like, if you can't do the $20, then you probably shouldn't be buying these. There's got to be something else you can spend your money on that makes more sense. But for those of you who are like, well, I don't care about the $20. I just want to know if it's worth doing. Yes, just get this. You'll be fine. You'll be happy with it for sure.
Yeah, I think it's a good upgrade for if you're on AirPods 3 or older. I think it's a decent upgrade.
Before we move on to Apple Watch, I do want to take a quick minute to yet again take another break for a word from today's sponsor. I feel like the best clothes are the ones you don't really have to think about. You open the closet, grab something you know looks good, fits well, and works with pretty much anything. That's really what I like about Quince. They focus on high-quality wardrobe staples made with premium materials like 100% Mongolian cashmere, organic cotton, and merino wool. Their cashmere sweaters start at just $60, and they also have premium pants, fitted tees, and polos, and breathable activewear. Everything is designed to be versatile and hold up to everyday wear. I've been wearing Quince myself long before, honestly, we started partnering with them on this podcast. And why it stands out to me is that the quality and feel are there without having to spend what you normally would for something comparable. They price everything 50 to 80% less than similar brands by working directly with ethical factories and cutting out the middlemen. And it all goes way beyond clothing too. They have hotel quality bedding and bath products, kitchen essentials, furniture, and a bunch of other stuff for the home. So find your next fall favorites at Quince. Download Quince app for app exclusive offers or go to quince.com/mac and get free shipping on your order with 365-day returns. Now available in Canada and the UK too. That's quince.com/mac. quince.com/mac. Thanks, Quince, for sponsoring this episode.
Your sausage McMuffin with egg didn't change. Your receipt did. The sausage McMuffin with egg extra value meal includes a hash brown and a small coffee for just $5. Only at McDonald's for a limited time.
Price and participation may vary. Promotion pricing may be lower than meal pricing.
Do we all need to be detoxing ourselves?
Before I go asking, how can I detox? I have to look inward. Okay, what am I doing? Can I identify at least 3 ways that my body detoxes and ways to support that? I promise if my message was more dramatic like that, I would have millions of followers and make millions of dollars. But I cannot sleep at night trying to sell someone something that their body already does naturally.
We're living in a crazy world now. I think it's a lot of people fear a lack of control. And as a result of this, this is the way of them trying to make sense of the world and try to take control over their own bodies. So by actively doing something, I'm going to detoxify things, therefore I'm going to feel better, I think is absolutely one of the reasons that it, you know, detoxifying has become so popular.
Listen to the full episode of Health vs. Hype with the American Medical Association on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So the next thing that Apple announced was the Apple Watch Series 12 and Ultra 4. And I will say, we have to maybe apologize to Apple. It depends on what your take is. We've been saying that these have not been, we weren't expecting them to be a pretty big upgrade. And honestly, if you look at it from like a surface level, if you don't really know what changed, you might still think that. And it's half true. But there is actually a lot new here. There's a completely new health sensing system, which might not sound cool, but is actually pretty cool and gives you a lot more. But I'm curious to hear your thoughts because you're giving me that smirk as maybe you might not agree.
No, I just, the thing that made me smile is health sensing system, because this is a new Apple marketing term for a system that previously existed on every single Apple Watch. It's just
the latest generation
version of that. So, you know, I think Apple was using a third generation optical heart rate sensor. Now it's using a fourth generation one, but we're not calling it that anymore. Now we're calling it a health sensing system. Fine, you know, whatever. It's not actually a thing that is new to Apple Watch per se. There is not actually a new health sensing system on the Apple Watch. It is the same health sensing system that's been there before. It's just a new version of that. I will say that aside, I agree with you that the upgrade here is relatively significant for the Apple Watch, actually. I think after years of pretty sedate upgrades, this feels to me like it's starting to be worth actually a true revision of the device. We've got heart rate sensing that is dramatically better. I think it now it measures your heart rate 60 times more often. So
every five seconds.
Yeah. So that's a huge amount more data. And this is enabling them to feed a lot more insights in all kinds of other areas. I mean, even things like step tracking is completely, their model for doing that is completely redone. And now there are complications that will show that in real time on the watch face. Just little touches like that. I mean, last year that would have been a headline major feature, but it's quite small here. We've got more RAM. We've got a brand new chip that supports some on-device processing. And actually we've got some Apple Watch exclusive AI features with audio intelligence, which is a whole suite of features, including one called Live Rewind that lets you go back 15 seconds to catch what someone said if you missed it. You've got Shazam on the Apple Watch just working ambiently to tell you what songs you've heard. And then it's got this Siri recap feature, which I think we really need to see how it works in practice, but it provides you with a kind of summary of the day, having processed and listened to everything that's gone on, which maybe is a little controversial. Nothing's actually being stored on device. The audio isn't being stored, but obviously it is ultimately processing a transcription of what's going on and providing you with that information. You can turn it off, and it should be relatively private and secure. You know, this is Apple. It has a great reputation for that kind of thing. So we have got a lot of features.
Did I not see that those two features are not, they are coming though to last year's model, correct? I thought I saw that somewhere.
I don't believe so.
I thought I saw that was just misinformation.
I think it's because it depends on the secure enclave that is built into the S11 to be able to do that processing on device and keep everything fully encrypted.
I'm trying to look and see if I can find this for the compatibility. I swear I saw somebody reputable talking about it, but
I will say that Apple's specs pages have been a little bit all over the place. They often are after the release of new products, there are little mistakes. They calculate things differently, and sometimes things like that do get through. So it wouldn't surprise me if that's been seen somewhere. But my understanding is it does depend on the secure enclave in the S11, which itself is more powerful and enables some of these things to be processed on device. Although Apple talked a lot about how it's processed on device, but then if you read the footnotes, it actually depends on an Apple Intelligence compatible iPhone.
I was just going to say, actually, I'm going to confirm now that you do need 12 and an Ultra 4, and you need a compatible iPhone. So it's not going to be something that...
So the whole thing's not going to process on your iPhone.
Yeah.
But I think this then goes to the Siri app on the iPhone. We've also got the new Readiness app, which provides you with a readiness score. And Better Health Insights, Apple's also redesigning the health app on the iPhone to go with all of this.
Finally,
advantage of all of that data. And you know, based on first glances, it does look really good.
So much better. So much better. It was one of those things during the briefing where I'm like, or not briefing, but during the keynote where I kind of forgot about the health app and was like, oh, did we change the way this looks in iOS 20? I literally pulled out my phone that's running iOS 27 and I opened it up and I'm like, oh, no, this is actually 100% new. And then they literally said, this is new for this year. But I thought they redesigned it in iOS 27, was just kind of sneaking it in as like a new thing. And it looks so much better. I really like the way that Apple's kind of giving you that information now. So from a visual standpoint, a lot of these watches might not look or appear drastically different, but there is a lot that's new that's going on here that's going to give you, especially if you're using this for health first features, if you're a runner, you know, an athlete of some sort, and you're really into tracking all of these things, you're going to get more of that information and probably more accurate. I think I've seen a bunch of stats going on. This is the most accurate heart rate monitor basically in any wearable that's out there. So that's cool. The prices stay the same, so that's cool. They start at the same $399 and I believe $799 for the Ultra 4. The Ultra 4, by the way, I mean, there's really nothing going on here. They get all the same stuff.
Yeah, it's largely the same. Yeah. I think
ceramic though.
Yeah, the Series 12's kind of look has been revised. Yeah. So we've got ceramic. We've got new titanium finishes as well. And they've redone the whole lineup of the aluminium watches. I think the only one that's the same is the Space Gray, but even that is actually slightly lighter. And they've now got this rather striking dark bronze color, which is unlike anything we've had before. I think it looks really good.
Yeah.
So there's a whole kind of... I think it's a significant upgrade. The one thing I would note on the design, just a tiny little thing is... this is actually not, strictly speaking, the same design as the Series 11 and Series 10, which we were expecting. It looks very similar, but it is actually 1 millimeter wider. With the ceramic ones, they are also even larger than that. So they've done this weird thing where they're calling it like a 46 millimeter case, but it's actually 47 if you buy a ceramic one. So the ceramic ones have different proportions, which is strange. And the displays are all very slightly smaller. The casings are kind of receded a little further, and the front glass is kind of larger over the front of the device, which means in combination with a smaller display and receded casings, that the bezels look bigger, which considering that over the Series 10 and Series 11, they got so much bigger than the Series 9 and earlier, I do think that's a step back. There must be reasons they're doing that. Maybe it's more durable, maybe it provides more internal space, but I just, when I think back to the Series 7 to 9 design that was so good and really had that kind of edge-to-edge look, I don't know why we've had to go back to such huge bezels. They look enormous.
Also, there's something going on with the crown too. Usually the crown sits flat up against it.
Further
and now
out.
It's like recessed in around it. I don't know. I mean, ultimately, I still think you could play that game that I've seen on one of the late shows. Might have been Jimmy Fallon or something, where it's like which Apple Watch is which model, and no one could tell. I'm probably six years, a
little unusual in that regard. But you know, plenty of people in the Apple community are very passionate about this sort of thing, and it actually wasn't me that noticed right away that the bezels were larger, but it was going around on Twitter.
After
the announcement of, hang on a second, aren't the bezels larger? And they are. If you look at, say, a Series 9 versus a Series 10 versus a Series 12, these things are getting quite significantly bigger with each version, which is such a shame because on the iPhone, they're shrinking. And you would think that that's the natural natural progress. We should be getting those smaller, but it does feel in some ways like that part of the device is moving backwards. So I do think that's a shame. But other than that, I've really got no complaints about the Series 12. I think it's actually a really good upgrade.
Yeah, and it stays at the same price. Also want to quickly shout out the ceramic cases again. I really love the white or gray, whatever. It kind of looks like a
it's
gray.
It's pearl white.
Pearl white, yeah. That makes sense. And I think it's really nice. The bluer one, the darker one, I could take it or leave it. I don't know that it looks that great to me personally.
It's also heavier than the white one.
Yeah. So it's all there. Yeah, I don't know. So anyways, that's the Apple Watch. Let's move on to what everybody cares about. If you haven't already, skip to this section. The iPhone Duo, which I know that name got hot and heavy there towards the lead up to the event. I still can't believe that Apple just took the name away from Microsoft. R.I.P. Surface Duo. Also, wasn't there a Surface Neo? Are we just completely? So, yeah. Is Apple just completely ignoring the fact that Microsoft exists? Because I feel like they are. Also, hilarious back and forth on Twitter between Duolingo and Samsung. I don't know if you've seen this.
Yeah.
So yeah, Duolingo was like they copied our name and whatever, you know, being cheeky as they normally are. And then Samsung came in and was like, they copied us too, friend. Like, don't, you know, we're supporting solidarity. And Duolingo was like, do not talk to me. We are not the same. Just basically still just shot back at Samsung. Kind of funny. But anyways, back to the iPhone Duo. That's what it's called. I don't know that I love that name, but I guess it is better and makes more sense than
it
Ultra.
It does make more sense than Ultra because this is not an Ultra device.
No, but I... you know what? Everyone knows what my first impressions are. I will recap that here in a second, but I want to know what were your first impressions. Now, you have not had the chance to hold one, so we'll see how drastically different yes. these two takes are. How do you feel about the iPhone Duo?
I have mixed feelings about it. I think
okay.
It looks to me like the best and most considered foldable smartphone that I have seen. I think that the way that the software... works and moving the UI elements around to one side to provide a very similar kind of vertical view to fit the same amount on the screen in that area, but then move the controls off to the side. I think it makes so much sense. I don't know why no one's thought of that before. Very impressed by things like the under-display camera. I think that even things like the nanotexture display on the inside, that wasn't rumored. It seems like a really innovative way to disguise the material and to disguise the crease a little bit better. Overall, I am very impressed by the execution. That being said, it still feels like a first generation device and far from perfect. And I still think that it's very, very clear to me that this thing is going to need at least two more generations before it starts to feel like a true mass market product.
Interesting. So I feel that people... And not just the people, I mean, the people at the event were very much, I feel like, the same thought as me. A lot of the comments that I've seen from, like, more mass market, because I feel like there was a lot of interest, not just from the tech community, given by the fact that our videos are doing really, really well and a lot of coverage is doing well. There's obviously a lot of more mass market appeal. And I've heard podcasts that have nothing to do with tech even talk about it. So... I think it's going to do really well, even on a first gen. And what you say might be true. I also am very, very impressed with it. I did get to hold one and use one and try it out. But there's a couple of things we need to talk about. Okay. Number one, please stop talking about the crease until A, you have tried one. Now, this isn't directed at you, by the way. This is directed at everyone. Let's not talk about the crease until you have tried it and seen it in person. And this goes for almost every foldable, but specifically this one. Yes, it's visible. It folds in half. What did you expect was going to happen? At some point, we might get to technology where you can't see it. I don't know when that's going to be. But I think Apple has done by far the best job, and they did it in the sneakiest way fashion, like the sneakiest fashion ever, and that's just by throwing nanotexture on it. And there's some other like crazy amount of layering that you can do on it and all that that Apple did with the displays. And I don't know. I'm not going to begin to understand the engineering behind it. They say they've done a lot to it. Even Jaws, I think, in an interview talked about how, you know, unfortunately a lot of this leaked, but some of the things that I'm guessing Samsung didn't know about. and that's how a lot of those leaks, in my opinion, didn't get through. Like Samsung knew the dimensions and that's how they were able to like beat them to it. But Apple does also do other things to the display. It's not just strictly 100% Samsung. And so there was things that didn't leak because they didn't know. And the crease is one of them. And how they were able to manage that was because of nanotexture and some other things that went into it. I don't think you'll notice it. I mean... until you turn the display off, you're not going to see it when you're using it with the, and this goes for most foldables, but specifically with this one, you really won't notice it and you barely feel it. Like, I mean, barely feel it on the iPhone Duo. That's number one. Number two, under display camera. That was a shock. I don't know about you, but we were,
yeah, I was surprised.
We talked about it and said they could do this. I think if we can roll back tape, and I don't have the time to go look for it, but in one of the episodes, I said they could do that, but they probably won't. And even Samsung did it and then took it away. So there's got to be a reason. And I feel like this is one of those things that's, I don't know, I feel like Apple's probably going to take it away at some point because there's been some mixed reports
really?
About how it
so.
Actually, you don't think so? I feel like people are complaining about how it looks. The camera quality, you know, I think MKBHD did
it's a first generation. I mean, what will they be able to do with a few
maybe.
More?
Maybe they can get better at it. It is not noticeable if you have the screen on and it's in like a lighter mode. The moment you switch, which I did do, but I don't know that I was filming this at the time. I switched it to dark mode and it's straight up visible and it's kind of in the way of things. We'll see how this goes when I get it in hand and use it on a daily basis. But I think another thing that Apple was doing to kind of like take away from the crease and from that under display camera, they had the always on display for both screens on all the time. And so you really couldn't ever actually get it to be dark quickly. Like it just always had something where it just kind of blended in and you really couldn't tell about the crease. So I didn't take the time because it just was a madhouse to try to get to the device. I didn't take the time to like turn that setting off and truly show, but I just feel like everyone makes such a big deal about the crease. And personally, it's not that big of a deal. No matter what foldable you're using, you do get used to it. This is exactly like the notch. So just reserve judgment. You can say, I think, but until I use, you know, maybe that's going to change. I really don't think it's that big of a deal. Hartley, how do you feel?
Yeah, I'm not worried about it. I think that this is still the best execution for mm-hmm. the crease, for the under display camera that we've
Definitely.
Seen.
Definitely.
And I just think that the level of consideration that has gone into this design, I mean, people have loved Samsung's offerings and have been very impressed by those, especially in recent years. I think Apple has really taken things to the next level here. And I don't think that that's actually a biased view. I think that there's been clearly a lot of consideration going into things like that front camera not taking up space on the display. I think that that is an example of where they've had to make some compromises with it, but I think that it is the least worst compromise. And just, I love what they've done with the software. I like that it's got all of these different orientations and modes, and you can split the keyboard and apps split in two when it's kind of half creased, when it's half kind of folded. And then you've got this bedside mode and you can show widgets as well. It's like it's always designed to be used in different ways. And I think that really takes advantage of the form factor, even the photography features that mm-hmm. you can do this auto take and you can see what someone else is capturing. It's just Apple have really done. I think this is what Apple do so well in general, which is that when they do finally get to making a device, they tend to take the best advantage of that device's form factor and take it to its sort of most extreme conclusion in very considered ways. And I think that that's probably the thing that's lasted with me the most.
I think it's just the fact that they make the software 100% in-house too. Like, it's not like Samsung that partners with Google and Android and all these other that put their own skins and variations over it. They have complete control of every single aspect of the device. And they make it so much easier for developers. And I think that's part of the reason why, by the way, if you wanted to pre-order it tomorrow, you can't. It doesn't come out until October 23rd. And pre-orders are October 16th. So you have a little bit of time. I think it's a production thing. Apple's getting some time to catch up on production. But also, there are some bugs that need to be worked out. And developers need time now to fine-tune the apps.
I even think it's probably going to take probably a year before we get all of those third-party apps. And, you know, especially, I mean, well, there's plenty of fantastic third-party apps that will do this right away. But what about things like banking apps and things like that that are always slow? And then you go to use the inner display and it's just some vertical column in there that doesn't look very good.
Well, the good news is that Apple does make it easier for the app to automatically adjust for the most part. But like they, I think there's some showcases and things going around where it's like apps pre-built before the specific iOS 27 dev kit that they could use for this. Like this is how it would look and it's not great. And then if they like actually make the app again using this and like tailor it for it, then it becomes way better. I hope a lot. And I think within this first month, all of the major apps, like Netflix has already done it. There's a handful of apps that have already done this, you know, in partner with Apple. So a lot of people are like, why is Netflix the thing that people are showing off during the event? Well, because it's already like the first app there that's updated and it looks fantastic. And no matter what orientation you flip it in, it's great. And I was very surprised to see because Samsung on the Z Fold 8, now the Ultra I think does it. I don't know. I haven't spent any time with the Ultra because everybody wanted to spend a lot of time with the 8. The hinge, like if you half fold it, they brought the controls, you know, because Samsung has done this before where you can like fold it in half and kind of have it in this way where it's sitting up. And now there's controls, let's say for Netflix to control like the, you know, skip forward, playback, all that stuff. That's on the bottom half of the screen, and then the top half would have the content that you're watching. Apple or Samsung used to do this, and then on the Z Fold 8, for some reason, you cannot, with that hinge, get it to stay, and then it kicks in the software. So like they removed those features, but Apple brought that in here. So that's cool to see like that they kind of took the good things that other people have done on foldables and brought those in. And there's specific functions for camera, like you mentioned, and all of that. I just think that it's going to take some time to work out the kinks. There are a few things that are very strange. The keyboard splitting. Remember how on like, isn't it the iPad where you can just kind of like take your thumbs and split? Why, for some reason, that does not work on the Duo. I don't know if it's a bug or if they just removed that functionality. I also can't seem to do it on iOS 27 on my iPad.
I think it will only split if you kind of partially fold it.
No, you can split the key. So here's the thing. You can split the keyboard, but you can't do it in that gesture. You have to initiate by tapping on, there's like a, I think an ellipses somewhere in the top left of the keyboard, and it says split or full. I actually did do this during the event or during one of my content captures that I was able to do. So you can split the keyboard. And then, yes, when you half fold it, it then automatically splits. But like, why? Why is that the time where it initiates that auto? Or like, I want to use the gesture because that makes it so much easier. But also when you, by the way, half fold it like that and go to type, it is very awkward to do. And I do not recommend that anyone does that. There's no reason.
I think they're just trying
to
provide versatile options. Yeah. I mean, there are so many different ways in which you can use this device. You can use it in portrait, landscape, and then folded variations within that. And in pretty much any orientation, that's ultimately why it's got Touch ID and not Face ID as well, because you can really use it any which way you choose. You can use it to watch video kind of folded over and propped up, or you can use it almost laptop style with a keyboard on the bottom and your content on the top, and you can multitask with different apps. You can pair different apps together. I think it's pretty great, really. I've been very impressed by it. The problem for me, unsurprisingly, is the camera.
Yeah, I mean, the big compromises are cameras and what was the other one that everybody was complaining about?
Well, I mean, people have been complaining about all kinds of things.
No, but like, what were the ones that we, because there were three compromises, and I can't remember the second one, but the third one was price, and honestly...
Yeah, the price was not bad, actually. They come in at under $2,000.
And people are going to yell at you. People are going to yell at you.
Well, they can yell at me, but we were expecting worse. So when you've been led to believe that it's going to be $2,200 or higher, actually coming in at less than $2,000, just about, is fairly impressive.
And only $100 more than Samsung. Let's just be clear here. And I think a lot of people that are complaining about the price, because there were people like us that were like, oh, it's not bad. And then there's others that are like, $2,000 are out of your freaking mind. And I understand that. But let's just go back. The Pro Max now starts at $1,299, I believe. And the Pro starts at $1,199. So that's not that far off. It's still $700.
And you're ultimately getting two displays.
Yes.
And there is a lot more engineering and hardware going into this. And ultimately, this is a much more complex device. And it's just the new thing. It's you end up paying a premium for that. You always do.
I just feel like people don't understand that there are other foldables out there, and the other foldables cost just as much, if not more. So, I mean, it's not bad. Oh, So I guess it's kind of the durability is the other issue I think some people are going to worry
but
about.
Durability is actually better than we expected. I think it's IP68, which I feel like is the same as the iPhone 18 Pro. So that's outstanding, actually, and way better than a lot of its competitors.
Here's what everybody has been asking me about it, and I can just tell you that it does feel thick and thin at the same time. It's really hard to describe. Like, it feels, I guess it's good. It's, like, substantial around the frame.
So yeah,
like,
it's quite heavy, like it's, isn't it?
It is, but, like, it doesn't get in the way of everyday use, so it still feels thin, and, like, when you fold it up, I still don't feel like it's, you know, I put it in my pocket. It was fine. It's a little heavier, but, like, it, you know, what do you want? You're getting two displays with you. You can't just make it paper. Then you really are going to break it with any kind of pressure that you put on it. So it has
and you
to
want
be
it to have a decent battery in it. You want to be able to fit all of this hardware. And part of the reason they've been so constrained with cameras is to try and achieve that thickness.
Oh, I remember what it was cameras, no Face ID, and price.
Yes.
So the no Face ID, I do think still sucks. However, they introduced the ability to unlock with your Apple Watch. I don't exactly know how that's going to work. Is it just Mac where it just automatically
do that.
Does it?
I believe there is already a feature in settings for you to do that with right now, actually.
Really?
On any iPhone.
Why has Apple not talked? I had no idea.
I think it's
an
accessibility feature. It's buried in there somewhere. It's very similar
to the
Mac feature.
I'm going to have to check that out. I genuinely did not know that.
I think I'm less bothered about the lack of Face ID, given all of these different orientations that you can use the device in. I think Touch ID is fine. And honestly, I think that there are fewer compromises here than I was expecting. Yes, it's a little bit thicker than we were expecting, maybe a little bit heavier. Yes, there's no Face ID, but just the killer for me is the cameras. I am just disappointed by the cameras, because all of the cameras, with the exception of the ultra-wide, are worse. And the ultra wide is the camera that I use the least and care about the least. But every other one, even the selfie camera, is actually worse. It's a 12 megapixel camera when actually we get 18 megapixels on any other iPhone. And what emerged yesterday is it looks like the sensor of the main camera is in fact the same as the iPhone 17e's. Well, obviously, we don't know this specifically yet. We're going based on Apple's tech specs, and Apple does not reveal that kind of information. But based on the focus pixel information that is listed there, it looks like effectively the camera unit that they are using for their main camera falls somewhere between the iPhone 17e and the iPhone 17/iPhone Air. The sense in which it's better than the 17e is it's got sensor shift stabilization rather than just optical image stabilization. But the sensor seems to be worse than even an iPhone Air, which I don't understand why they've had to do that. I understand that they can't put the variable aperture in there and all of that kind of thing because of constraints with space, because it adds thickness. But I just, it's so disappointing. And they did try to get around it by showing off some very cool and specific camera features, like the ability to take 48 megapixel selfies ostensibly by the fact that you can use that rear camera while seeing what you're doing on the front display. And now you can have it automatically take pictures of you when you pose, if you set the phone down. No other device has that feature, even though that is, again, another software feature that should come to every other device. But just that camera, it's going to be in my mind if I buy an iPhone Duo that has the same sensor as an iPhone 17e. And while the iPhone 17e's camera is good and
it's fine.
It just upsets me because you're the decision I'm having to make here is between an iPhone 17 Pro, which has such a good main camera, and the main upgrade with that is specifically on that main camera, or an iPhone Duo where you slip right back down almost to the bottom of the iPhone lineup in terms of the photography capabilities.
Nah, man. Apple wants you to take both. And that's why you have the SIM switching feature that you can now use your phone number on two iPhones at the same time. It just depends on which one, not at the same time. But if you pick up an iPhone 18 Pro, you're using that, you fire off a message, it goes with your phone number. You put it down, you unlock your iPhone Duo, you send a message, it uses your phone number. It can switch between two devices. It just depends on which one you use. I do genuinely think that Apple for right now is, you know, it's not targeted for this, but I do think people, even if you're considering this device and you have, let's say, even if you have a 17 Pro and you're like, I just really want a foldable, I think it's great. Don't get rid of, if you are in the position to be able to not get rid of your 17 Pro, don't do that. Also, you need to have T-Mobile and Verizon for right now. If you have any two of those carriers, don't do that. And you could take a different phone with you depending on what you're doing. Because I think for most people, you're probably not snapping photos that need really good cameras all the time. So if you know you're going to find yourself in a position, and I know we can't always predict that, but if you know you're going out to something that's got scenic views and a nice, you know, you're traveling maybe, just take your other phone with you and take the pictures, Harley. I'm not saying I know that sounds out of touch and ridiculous. I'm just saying there is a workaround right now.
I know it's out of touch and ridiculous, and I have considered it. Admittedly, I have considered it, but
I'm just saying.
I'm not doing that, and I'm not going to spend $2,000 on a device with a camera that is so constrained. I really was hoping that they would at least do something like really take some time to explain why, okay, it doesn't have the variable aperture and it doesn't have a telephoto, but this camera is incredible for its own reasons. But actually, they've really just tried to skirt around this issue with the camera, and pretty much they're just selling it as it's a 48 megapixel camera. That's the same as any other camera on an iPhone, even though that isn't true. It's the same in the sense that it's 48 megapixels, but
dude,
not
but
in any
it's
other
close
way.
It's close enough, and I'm going to prove
it's close
this
enough for most people. For you know, if you're the kind of person that you want to, you spend your iPhone watching a lot of video. Maybe you commute. You spend an hour a day watching YouTube or Netflix on your phone specifically, or you set your phone down when you eat and that's what you watch something when you eat. If that is the case, then an iPhone Duo is fantastic. But if, I don't know, you travel a lot, you tend to see a lot of new places where you kind of do some amateur photography or whatever, the iPhone Duo is just, it's not for you. It's just not.
No, but I'd argue that... I don't know. I don't know if I have data. I'm just going off of personal experience, and I feel like a lot of people might be just my own personal opinion. I feel like it's closer to me than others, like the majority of people. You aren't taking pictures every day. You just aren't. And if you are, those pictures are probably not something that you need the greatest camera for. And like these main sensors on this phone is 1,000% good enough and very, very close to what you're getting on the 17 Pro, the 18 Pro. Like, I'm going to show you, because I probably will do this video, that if I take pictures all around town using the main sensors on each, you will not be able to tell the difference until I point it out to you. I just have a good feeling about that. Now, when we get into certain situations where it appears that you need that larger aperture, I guess, and you need the better sensor that's barely better than the other one, sure, you might be able to point it out. But I would say for 95% of your main sensor pictures, you're not going to care. Obviously, you don't have a telephoto that can go to 8x. I get that. And the ultra wide, whatever. I don't know who uses that on a daily basis. But if you use that, I feel like it's going to be the same case as the main. But like, you are doing every other activity on your phone far more than you're doing pictures and videography. Unless that is your job to use it on those pros, then fine. Yeah, it's not the phone for you. But I would say a vast majority of the people are going to be watching content, surfing the web, firing off messages, want to be able to do a duo FaceTime call, which I think sounds pretty cool. If you're asking me, who is this for? It's for my kids, man. When I'm like, hey, go talk to your grandpa. He's on the phone right here. And they're not getting up because they're just on the couch. Like, at least they can see him. And I know you can do that, but it's like, now they can see the other person too. It's not like dual recording on an iPhone. There's other like reasons why someone would want to be able to see them too. You know, it's like, I don't have to come over and bring it to them. They can see from across the room. That kind of thing is cool. And there's just a lot of more, I don't know. There's just more use cases for this than I would think there would be for someone who's like, I need the 18 Pro camera system.
I agree. It's really just that for me, the cameras are so fundamental. And I think that it's the psychology of it. Apple has been selling, Apple's been selling me on the Pro cameras for years. Sure. And has kind of convinced me almost every year to upgrade my iPhone, primarily because of getting better pictures. And even if it's a tiny little upgrade, every year I feel like I'm capturing better pictures than the year before. And sometimes, you know, I still hit limits on what it's able to do in low light situations. But my iPhone pictures are looking better than ever. And now Apple's kind of saying, eh, just forget about all that. It's a decent camera. Just go and use this one. It's not as good as the others, but just forget about it. And that is a hard thing for me to get my head around when Apple has spent years selling me on these very small camera upgrades that now it's going to just wipe out.
And so, look, listen, I am very passionate about this because I'm not trying to say that my opinion is right by any means. I just want to offer a different perspective for those who are very much set in like the stone of like, I need the best cameras and I don't understand why I need a foldable. You will not understand why you need that until you physically use one. And I'm not just saying go to the store, pick it up, and like mess around with it for 5 seconds and then hand it off to the next person. Like truly use it in your day-to-day life. And then tell me. It's the same thing as an iPad. Didn't people say when an iPad came out, like, why do I need that? I'll just use my computer or I'll use the phone that I have in my pocket. Why do I need an iPad? Well, guess what? iPads are still around and they're very popular. So I think this is nice to really have a good blend of the two. And when you fold it up, it is, by the way, I have people ask me, oh, the front display seems very chunky and like it's not the same as a normal phone. It is very much the same as an iPhone 18 Pro, in my opinion. It's almost the same.
I mean, it's just a tiny bit taller than an iPhone mini. So if you're a mini fan, I mean, this
you're
is pretty
gonna
good.
Love it. And typing on it, I know a lot of people are asking me, like, you're the first person to see, you know, in a video of you actually typing on that front display and the inner display. It's a great experience in both. I'm going to tell you right now, it feels like a normal phone. You can use this for 75% of your day as a normal phone. And then when you need that extra screen real estate, you unfold it and you're greeted with, and I didn't even get a chance to say this, it is a fantastic display. And big iPhones like the 17 Pro Max, the 18 Pro Max, I want nano texture now. Give it to me on that phone too, because I really like it on the Duo. I think it makes it look really good, cuts down on the glare, makes the crease go away, and it's just still sharp and vibrant than ever. It really doesn't feel like a matte screen protector that's on it. If you've ever used nano texture before, you'll know that. Otherwise, I just feel like more people are really going to like it. I've seen others come around who have said, I don't know why I would need this, but now that I see it, I want one. Apple did a really good job, by the way, unfolding it and folding it, getting that really cool animation is such a gimmick, but like, I don't know. It makes it just look really, really cool. I'm fanboying about it, and people will know that we don't usually fanboy about a lot of things. I am very impressed. Also very shocked that they said Apple Pencil support. They mentioned it briefly for 10 seconds and then glossed over it and was like, okay, see you later. What? We didn't think that was going to be something that happened. And then it got rumored for a minute, but it was like, oh, it's probably not going to happen. And now it is. It's coming later. And you can only use the USB-C model, which I didn't get a chance to look into. Is there a reason why for that?
No, I just guess it's because you can't pair and charge it otherwise.
I guess the magnet. Yeah. But so you have to stick it into the USB-C. Are we going to be seeing a bunch of those memes now? I guess you could use a cable.
You have to use a cable, too. But it still will look pretty silly. Like, but someone out there will enjoy that for note-taking. It's a good feature. I think they really have, in every area except the camera, they have thrown everything at this device, and I am very impressed with it. And I will say that it is better in every way except the camera than I thought it would be. The camera is actually worse than I thought it would be,
but
in every other way it's
worse. Even though it's worse, would you take that main sensor? We'll just talk about the main sensor, because I think that's why it's called the main sensor. It's what people use majority of the time. Would you take that over a Samsung Galaxy S26 Ultra's main sensor?
Yeah, of course I would.
Okay, would you take that over a Google Pixel main sensor?
Yeah, of course I would.
Okay, so there you go. It is still the best camera, in your opinion, than any other phone out there. It's not like you're settling for a different device. So, okay, yeah, it's not better than the current competitor, which is its own freaking product, the iPhone 18 Pro, but it's still, in your words just now, you think it's better than every other phone out there, even though it might not be true.
It's not just the main, though. This is the thing. What I will say is, to just be very clear on my position here, if it was the case that it had the main camera and a telephoto, but it was the weaker main camera that it's got, I'd buy this device without a thought.
Because okay, you really need that telephoto.
It's the combination of the inferior main and no telephoto, and the fact that that front-facing camera is also 12 megapixels. So you're asking me to make a compromise with every single camera on the device except the ultra-wide, which is the one camera I don't care about.
Okay. Not to be a like a mouthpiece for Apple, but you said it yourself. Technically, that selfie camera is not as good, but you could just flip it around and now you have greater selfies that you can, I mean, you could do that on any phone, but you can actually see yourself and frame yourself.
And this
and
is true, but
stand it up anywhere you are. You could be in this really
thing,
nice.
Though. This is an Apple thing. This is actually not how people, you know, take selfies in the real world, because really, who wants to stand there with a huge iPad style thing?
Oh, you'll, like up you'll here, find someone.
Taking
you'll
selfies. Find someone. Some people will do that. But to me personally, if I ever take a selfie or something like that, and I'm on Snapchat, I'm just doing it casually, right? I don't, it's not a serious thing, but I still want that to be a nice image. I'm not going to unfold the thing and hold it up here.
I still feel like you can take great thirst trap photos with an iPhone Duo, and then you can do more editing of those photos, and you can do all the things that you'd need on a much larger display. That's all I'll say.
And I'm sure that is the case, but I'm just, this is the conflict I have right now.
I need you to buy one. I need you to try it for at least 2 weeks. Listen, there's a return policy for a reason. It's specifically for products like this.
Everyone got so angry with you last time for saying that and saying that's so wasteful. You shouldn't return products if you don't.
But it's not though. I'm not saying that everyone needs to go. If you have no interest in buying it, that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you're someone like Hartley who's sitting here right now and torn between it and like doesn't think that they could use it but might actually want one, then buy it. Apple will figure out a way to not waste that device. I assure you, it will not go to waste. Be smart about this. There is a reason why you're allowed to return it. Have you never made a purchase where you're like, I'm not 100% sold that I'm going to keep this? If you have never done that in your life, then you are Mother Teresa and congratulations to you. But don't sit here, and I'm not saying you, Hartley, but don't sit here and talk down to me like I'm some terrible person for recommending a return policy that exists for this damn reason. Now I'm all mad about this because this is the whole reason why you can do this. Figure out whether you like it and keep it. Don't buy it without, you know, if you know 100% in your head that you're never going to keep this device, then yes, that is being a bad person and wasting an opportunity for somebody else to buy it. But if you're genuinely torn, try it out. Apple wants you to do that. I assure you they do, because they think they have confidence. They're not going to sit here and be like, well, I don't know if you're going to like it. You probably won't. They're going to say, hell yeah, you're going to like this and you're going to want it. So go ahead and buy it. You're not going to return this. So do it. Try it out. And if you don't like it, it's no harm, no foul. I assure you, they're not going to go to waste. That's my rant. You guys can kill me in the comments. I don't care.
I agree.
I agree.
And I think that is probably what I need to do here.
Yeah. I think you're going to like it.
And it's, you know, all of these things like the nanotexture, even the cameras, and just the weight and the weird form factor is not something that you can really fully understand looking at pictures online. And I have yet to actually see this myself, of course. And so it is hard to have a truly informed opinion about all of these things. But I still think the cameras are bad.
Just note that in 2 months, when I go back to my iPhone 18 Pro, you guys could all rip me for that.
And we know that's going to happen.
It is. I picked up the Duo. And I did the Duo. I was amazed. I'm like, this is so great. And guys, I will be using the Duo for a while. But don't kill me when I end up going back to the 18 Pro, because then I picked up the 18 Pro and I was like, damn, I really like the feel of this. it's just, you know, they want you to take two phones with you. And I feel like that's what I'm going to have to do. Listen, it's all love on my end. I'm not truly mad at people, but I do think it's ridiculous that you just think that you cannot use the, you know, that it's a waste to use the return policy. That's why it exists. You know, obviously if there's something wrong, that's why you would return something, but also like, you have to try it. Or you think it's a waste to try on clothes and then not like it and return it? Like,
you're really passionate about this stuff.
I'm really mad about that. If people comments. Are, yeah, I'm really mad about that, because like, what else is it there for? I'm sorry. Am I going crazy? What else is a return policy there for? I don't know. I mean, obviously, aside from defects, but like, there's other reasons to return things. Okay. No, I'm not going to drop the iPhone Duo. Please stop asking me. If it drops, it's probably going to... No, I don't think it's going to break, but it's going to have some issues. So don't drop it. That's my recommendation. Buy a case. There are cases for them. They're actually kind of cool. I really like
folio
that.
Folio case is very cool.
I tried it in real life. It's really cool. I do like it. I wish that they would sell one that also is just like, I don't want the cover part. Just give me the back with the kickstand. That's fine. Make one with a frame that goes around it and it's the back. I don't need the front. But some other third party, if they haven't already, they're going to do it. So just don't worry about it. Treat it like every other phone. Try not to drop it. Like, I don't understand why people keep asking me about it. It's just, don't drop it. It's expensive. Yeah, I think you're going to like it. I don't know. I really liked it. The event was good. John Ternus, we didn't even talk about it. But, you know, he seems like a
fine.
Seems like the chill young CEO. He had iShow Speed, which whatever, we're not going to get into that. But, you know, there were some things. I missed Kid Cudi at the event. I don't know how, but he was apparently like five rows in front of us. Just no one. I don't know who that is. You know what? He's like a... He's a famous musician / I guess he dabbled in acting before. Probably seen him since. You would know some songs if you go look it up. Anyways, he's from Cleveland, so hell yeah. I mean, he's not like a Cleveland artist. He's a national, you know, I think he's won some Grammys, I would imagine. If not, he's been robbed. But yeah, anyways, that's the event. Would love to hear from you. Do not in the comments talk about the return policy or I will lose my mind again next week. and with that said, we will catch everybody in next week's episode.
Andy and Anna here from your new favorite podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
Yes, we are two of the four hosts of the podcast that stuffs fascinating, amazing, weird, mad facts into your ears on a weekly basis. You got any good facts, Andy?
Yes, how about this one? Anteaters have evolved on 12 separate occasions.
Wow.
Mysterious. Wonderful.
The world really wants them to exist. What about this one? When Ronald Reagan left office, he left a note on the White House lawn for the squirrels, warning them to beware of George Bush's dogs.
So there you go. If you like fascinating facts and much more besides, we are No Such Thing as a Fish.